We're rolling.
All right. We're going to call to order the April 4th, 2018 meeting of the South Kingstown Conservation Commission. It is 6 o'clock. First order of business is roll call. Vernon Wyman.
Present.
Mary Tabu Rubiano.
Here.
Christopher O'Connor.
Here.
Jennifer James.
Here.
Ann Heffron.
Here.
And Lorraine Jubert is not here at this time. Also with us is our senior planner staff advisor, Doug McLean, and joining us is our town manager, Robert Zerensky. Second order of business is approval of the minutes of the March 7th meeting. Does anybody have any comments before we set the motion? Anything that they'd like to add or change? All right, I will accept the motion to accept.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
The motion passes. Third order of business is advisory views of the planning board, Cottrell Homes and Ridge Land Development Project, combined master plan and preliminary plan review and groundwater protection overlay district, request to develop 250 kilowatt DC.
Would you like a chair?
Ground-mounted principal solar energy system measuring 28,206 square feet on the same parcel as an existing single-family residence and agricultural operation located at 500 Waits Corner Road. And who do we have for the applicant?
My name is Steve Herzog. I'm an ecologist with AMEC, and we are engineering firm for the applicant.
I'm Steve Burke with EconnectRenewables.
Do you want to give us an overview of the project?
It's a 250 kilowatt ground-mounted solar project on the Cottrell property. They have a portion that was set aside from the conservation easements, so it's on that portion of the property, and the power is being sold directly to National Grid. We have submitted a notice of determination to DEM. Waiting for some responses back from them on that. We're not within the 50-foot buffer of the wetlands, but we just did it as a courtesy to them.
Is it officially the Cottrell Homestead that is selling the electricity?
There's a lease. Rhode Island Solar LLC is leasing the property from the Cottrells.
Gotcha.
And the property owner's here tonight.
Very good.
So, and I'll remind the CONCOM that the purview of our review is just on the groundwater protection overlay district issues.
Yep.
And we are making an advisory opinion to the planning board tonight.
Thank you. Now, we have seen projects similar to this, I believe, even on Waste Corner Road, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And some of the questions that came up before were permeability into the groundwater. The panels themselves aren't going to be enough of a restriction towards water getting down. And that was one of my own. What do you think?
I don't know what they would release.
No, not releasing. No, just allow rainwater to. You know, they're not obstructing. It's not being impervious.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, we're not disturbing the ground. We're not taking any topsoil off, doing anything. We're just going to come in and drive posts and build our racking off of that.
Is there a lot of compaction that happens through all of the activities on site?
No. During the post driver is a track vehicle, so we'll go through and drive the post. Everything else is kind of hand carried on site. There's a log that might drive around and deliver material to locations on site.
And it doesn't look like there's a ton of, and I run by this. There's not a much vegetation or anything that's being cleared for it, correct?
No, it's
agriculture.
It's pretty much turf.
Yeah.
Are there any concrete slabs or any other impervious elements that are part of the installation?
There's a slab underneath the transformer, probably a 5-foot by 5-foot slab that we're going to place.
And the transformer is contain. Non-contaminating,
it's biodegradable, nut-based oil.
Yeah, the new stuff. Not the horrible old stuff. I'm okay with it.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions?
No.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Do we want to hear a motion for an advisory opinion to the planning board?
I make a motion to the planning board to accept the plans as they are and as the project is proposed.
No amendments?
No.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
A second.
Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was his name.
Yeah.
Dave.
I always feel awkward doing this.
Our next order of business is a discussion of proposed community outreach process regarding the plastic shopping bags and the ordinance.
And I can give a quick update, Dave. Just you caught through some of the email where we were in our process.
Yes.
And essentially, the CONCOM has...
Excuse me. Could you say your name for the record?
Dave McLaughlin, 3 Haskell Avenue, Newport, Rhode Island.
And Dave is here as a representative of Clean Ocean Access. They're a group that has just provided good information to other communities that have considered these types of bans before. Jen James' co-worker is the president, and she was
of the board.
Of the board. And she was kind enough to help give us a little perspective tonight. We're pretty early in our process. In fact, we're really not, you know, committing to a big public outreach at this point. The first task was to conduct what we would envision as one-on-one interviews with business owners, and we're thinking of a range of business owners that would be impacted, large and small-scale businesses, and we wanted to understand and hear from them directly what some of the concerns might be, and then think about how an ordinance could get in front of or address some of those. I think a lot of it is that we're a community that, you know, I think that there's a citizenry here that would, you know, generally have some support for this. I think that, you know, there's a thought that this is a good thing to do, but that, you know, there may be some pushback from businesses and not really understanding it, wanting to, you know, be prepared for it. And we wanted to get in front of those issues first with a little bit of like a one-on-one dialogue. This is also something that, a process that we outlined and suggested to the council, and I think the council, that really resonated with them, is making sure you get the businesses engaged and get their voice into the process. And in the end, it's the council that would be considering the ordinance, so we want to make sure that, you know, they have we pulled in the constituents that they think would be most valuable. And so we haven't actually reached out to a business yet. We're basically still constructing our messaging on it and our process. And so with that being said, if other people have suggestions, other feedback, you know, happy to hear it. But Dave is really here just to maybe tell us what he's done for other communities and tell us some resources that, you know, there might be out there for us.
Great. Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I certainly completely support the community engagement and listening to the people in the community, because that's really what matters. You know, just a little history on our side. We've been involved with this topic in the state of Rhode Island since 2012. We got involved a little bit with the statewide effort years ago, which really had a narrow focus just on the bad effects of plastic bags. That really tried to go somewhere, never went anywhere, and never got out of committee. And then Barrington took a little bit of a different approach, actually starting from the Conservation Commission with a little bit of a broader perspective on the environmental impacts and stewardship as a concept. And that went through some, you know, some debate and process. I participated in that, so I can share those experiences. And then, you know, what felt like a long time, just 2 years later, you know, we started a campaign on Aquinic Island. And that started in like May of 2016, and we finished it in February of 2018. Reaching out to all three of the communities with a uniform, consistent ordinance, and along the way, Jamestown came on board as well. So a lot of steps and activities happened along those ways, and I'm happy to share anything and everything about the experience. You mentioned businesses. I could certainly
provide what I've heard there, if that's of interest.
Yeah, it would be, definitely.
Yeah.
So I think that if you look at the conversation, the topic, and you just have a limited conversation about the impacts of eliminating plastic bags, and for a moment, let's not even consider a fee. If you eliminate the plastic bags and you switch to providing paper bags for your customers for the point of checkout, you know, the initial impact's going to be that you're going to have higher carrying costs to purchase the bags, and perhaps more startlingly is, if you're aware with limited space in retail, is you need storage capacity. So if you want to make a bulk purchase to actually get the same unit price, you probably have to buy a portable on-site storage container, which is kind of ridiculous. You would never buy that many paper bags. So to buy a smaller amount and store it in your shop, you take on a bag that would probably cost, instead of 2 to 3 cents, it might cost 7 to 9 cents on average. And again, those numbers are based on the volume that you purchase, right? So I'm sure Walmart has less expensive bags, but some of your smaller shops, it's a little bit more. So there's definitely a margin there on the price.
Yeah.
And then you ask the question, well, what if this becomes the model? What if we eliminate the plastic bag and we have to provide paper 100% to all our customers? Obviously, that comes with an additional cost. There's also the training process of how to pack the bags, checkout, and things like that. So a little education there for the checkout activity. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's a higher cost for the business.
Did any of that translate into incentives to marketing their own multi-use bags?
Right. Well, that's where it goes next. Because then you introduce the concept, well, what if some of the customers start to bring their own reusable bags? And if they do, then you're using less paper bags. It still probably costs you more than plastic at that point. Then you introduce the concept like corporate social responsibility and how stewardship aligns with the values of the company. And so then they start to market their own reusable bags. And then they get their customers to see the value and the importance that they work. So theoretically, now the amount of paper bags has reduced even more. There will come to this point where this partial quantity of paper bags is now costing you the same amount as the 100% that you had of plastic bags. The spirit of the ordinance, any effort, should be about durable, reusable products to get to the point that so many customers are bringing their reusable bags that now you actually are saving money. You know, it would probably take some time, but the idea, and I'm sure this is valid in other communities, especially Europe, they don't provide bags. If you go to that extreme, then the cost that the business has today for plastic bags goes away. Right?
Yeah.
But that's like a long sentence, a deep breath to get to that point. But that's kind of, if you look at it just from that perspective, where the cost parameters come into play, how they shift, and really the value proposition to the business. In fairness to that topic, I wouldn't say that we moved at an accelerated rate on Aquinic Island, but we certainly moved forward with community support and community interest. So I think businesses either got ahead of the curve or a little bit behind the curve on endorsing and supporting the movement. So it wouldn't really be fair to say it was completely not influenced by the community upwelling and support to go in this direction. But it's probable to think that people would have switched to reusable bags and businesses would have had to introduce paper, and then the amount of paper would reduce. One of the stores in town, Cumberland Farms, which is an interesting organization because on one hand they're, you know, a multi-million-dollar company, but they're somewhat regional in that regard. They switched at one of their stores to paper bags a few weeks after the ordinance was passed in Newport, and at that point there was voluntary compliance, like 7.5 months. And one of the things they noticed right away was a behavior change, that their customers no longer wanted their pack of gum in a bag. So it's like, before you take the gum in the plastic bag and not even think about it. And now you get the gum in this bag where you can't even see the gum. So why don't I have a small brown paper bag? So they started, you know, rejecting the bags.
Which is good.
So these are the experiences that we've had. You know, we had really good discussions with Clemens Market in Portsmouth.
I was just going to ask about comments.
And, you know, of all businesses in Portsmouth to get any bad press on it, you know, and Quinnock Island, their environmental stewardship is amazing, the work they've done to reduce their waste footprint, composting, recycling. But what they found was they were already in a position that they were offering paper bags and plastic bags and reusable bags. So they kind of were already in this paradigm of providing options to their customers. But I think they, at the end of the day, they said they would support whatever the community went with, which was good. And it was really good to see that Newport, Middletown, and Portsmouth won at very different rates. I think Portsmouth never really wanted it from a council point of view, but with the community support, they went with it. But the good thing about it was we learned different things in different communities. So in Portsmouth, there was an initial outreach. I won't say it was off the record, but it wasn't necessarily publicly shared, of the Portsmouth business community. The business development group of the town reached out to the businesses to ask for their impact. And it was kind of across the board. So they asked any business. So they asked a construction company, how's this going to impact? And the answer was no impact, because they don't use bags, right? So, but then the next step was the formal process of creating a survey. So we created a survey. It was about 7 to 8 questions. Over 700 people answered the survey. 67% were in support of.
How were they distributed?
It was done online, and it was also present at Town Hall as well as at Clemens Market.
Okay.
But was it a mailer? Like, how did you get all the names of who you were distributing to online?
It was all electronic.
Like, you just basically post a notice on the town's Facebook.
Yeah, on the town's Facebook. Okay. It was in public newspapers. It was shared by the council. And I should back up a step. The first place was we held a public meeting. So Clemens was there. We were there. Clemens brought some great cookies and coffee. We had some people from the industry there. And we did a lot of...
from the plastic industry?
Well, actually, from the environmental community. Okay. I was looking at this from a broader perspective.
Okay.
But anyone was able to talk. We did a lot of advertising for the meeting. 9 people showed up. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. But we gave a lot of time. And then after that, then we did the survey. We had the survey open for 3 weeks. That was from late October.
You said 700 people?
700 people. And my numbers were, don't quote me on these numbers, but I believe that the town survey related to their waste station, because they have a place where they bring the trash, and are you going to go to pay-as-you-throw? I think they had upwards of 1,000 people that replied. So 700 relative to that is actually a really good sample size for the town of Portsmouth. There would have been one thing if we had 80 people.
Yeah.
Because in fairness, I probably would have known all 80 of those people. But 700 was a good representation.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where the input went.
And their town council wasn't super supportive of it. They were more supportive of a business community.
They were cautious about supporting it. I think that they had concerns that, you know, one hand, there were bigger issues, you know, that knit bottles, plastic bottles, were a bigger issue than plastic bags. There was another side of it that I think there was a sense of taking away someone's choice, which is valid. It's an argument I can't argue against. Except if you have a council full of people that tell you that's what we want them to do. And I think there was just a concern, a genuine concern, that it would negatively impact Clemens Market in Portsmouth, which is a valid concern. The reality is Market Basket was opening up in Fall River, and I don't really think that customers were deciding whether to shop at Market Basket or Clemens based on the bag they were using. It was probably the price and the products that were offered. So it's definitely a risk. I mean, small shops, it's a challenge. So that medium-sized business is definitely going to be the most sensitive business. You know, North Kingston, like Dave's Market, would be the concern, as opposed to Shaw's or Stop and Shop. So that was a concern. I think people were aware of it. The people that I talked to, even people that didn't support it, said that they liked shopping at Clemens, and they're not going to go shop somewhere else because of a bag. You know, but, you know, We tried to get an estimate. I mean, it was just our own numbers of sitting in the parking lot, and we estimated that it might have been $40,000 to $50,000 a year for them to have to switch to paper versus plastic. But those are just rough, crude numbers based on us watching how many people came in the store on a Saturday afternoon for an hour. But we were just trying to get a ballpark number, because rightfully so, I wouldn't ask for a business to disclose their financials of their inventory. But I haven't heard any negative feedbacks from the businesses. I mean, all of the ordinances have a hardship variance, so any business can come back and make a claim, whether it's a small Chinese restaurant or a large consumer shop.
And what does that typically entail, a claim? You come back and say, this is hurting me, so I should be exempted, or?
Yeah, the hardship variance basically allowed a business to come back and provide a case explaining why the ordinance was causing a hardship for their business. I'm almost answering the question with the same information because we haven't actually gotten to that point yet.
Right.
I think one of the differences was is in Newport and Middletown, the way the ordinance was written is that the decision can be made by the manager, whereas in Portsmouth they adjusted it so that it would have to be brought back to the council. And things like a hardship variance as well as the enforcement parameters, those are really where there are going to be town-to-town variances. In one town it said, the zoning board is going to enforce it. In another town, it said it's going to be delegated by the town manager. So in Middletown, it's delegated to a particular police officer to go out to the stores and let them know.
Because you've mentioned the, obviously, we're starting with the impact on the business.
Sure,
and
sure.
Understanding that, I think that's a good place to start because you don't want to start with them opposed to even the direction you're going, never mind the specifics. But I'm intrigued by the idea of while there may be additional cost for the reusable bag or even the paper bag, the idea of consistently charging the customer for the bag, providing a coincident disincentive, which I think in Rhode Island is pretty, nobody wants to be literally nickel and dime.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That is reality. And their thought process becomes very different if it's known that they will have an additional expense if they choose to use even the bags that are offered and then are not reusable. So I'm curious whether that entered that equation on these bags.
Yeah, and that's the topic of a fee versus no fee. I think it's somewhat straightforward as to the pros of why you would put it in place. When this whole movement of bag bans came about, the first generation ban was just a ban. The second generation introduced the concept of a fee. And they claimed to be better. And I would say that they got better results, so it's fair to say that it was a better structure of an ordinance. But as time changes, behaviors change, people change. So, and I say that because when we went forward with the concept of moving forward on Aquidneck Island, what we didn't want to introduce was the risk, was that a municipality would say, I understand what you're trying to do. Let's just put a 10-cent fee on every bag and let the plastic bags continue. We didn't want to take that chance, so we didn't go with the fee option, and we just said we're going with the straight bag ban. The interesting thing is that Walmart, which to the best of my knowledge, they changed just a few weeks ago, but for over 3.5 months, Walmart did introduce a 5-cent explicit charge for the bag. And one could say that that might have influenced consumer behavior and discouraged them from continue to get paper bags.
That was plastic bags that they put that on?
No, they put that on paper after the ordinance went into effect.
So like kind of to offset their cost for the paper bags?
But I also see it at the same time, yeah, it's a disincentive, but it's also an incentive. At every checkout counter, certainly in our two major markets, Shaw's and Belmont's,
here.
At the checkout counter, you're looking at the bags that you can buy for $1.
Right.
And
right.
Each one has a very nice prominent logo that you see on the outside of the store.
Yeah.
I mean, so why not? And if you think it's just a 10-cent or maybe even 5-cent, that would certainly offset the 7 to 9 cents that a bag costs, not reflecting the storage fees or anything.
Right. Okay.
But it would help the store, and it would be an incentive for the customer.
Belmont does an incentive now for bringing in your own reusable bags. They give you 5 cents off per reusable bag
right.
to use.
Didn't Walmart does that?
Belmont.
I asked them, by the way, if they would, I don't need a bag. Can they still get the nickel? They said, no, it's only a
That's interesting. I like that twist, but...
Take the bag and take it out.
Yeah.
So the Providence Town Council or City Council though passed at least a version, and the mayor vetoed it over the issue of the fee, right? Claiming, or he had heard from a faction that was concerned about the impact on the disadvantaged or folks that just don't have the extra nickel.
You know, I was talking with Director Coit about this the other day. It's a sensitive topic. And the least thing we want to do is ever put more burden on the most vulnerable, or also the future generations. I mean, we've got to think about where this debt is going, whether it's for today or tomorrow. But I think what's going to happen in the Providence area is this conversation is happening. And people are going to look at those nice bags. They're going to see that they might cost a dollar or two, and a few more people will buy those bags. So I think what's going to happen is you'll see more people switch over, even if the ordinance isn't in place. I don't know what's going to happen at the province level. It's really, if Providence goes forward with, I think the spirit is what will the entire state do? So that's why we're really supportive of moving forward without a fee, just to not introduce that complexity, but really allowing the businesses to make a decision that if you want to introduce a fee, I mean, there's two ways to do it. You can either add it as an additional line item at checkout, or you can add, a fractional cost to all of your products. If you go to shop and you buy 40 or 50 items per week, the reality is there's probably a few of them that change 5 or 10 or 15 cents. I mean, if you buy fresh produce, it changes all the time. So if you were to add an additional cost, I don't think you would see you wouldn't notice it in your bill.
If Providence or South Kingstown or any other community does decide to go with a fee, you could always exempt those who pay with food stamps, for instance.
Sure.
Yeah.
And the exemption is an interesting topic, just to kind of bring that into the loop. There's an awful lot of exemptions on the ordinance that we have in place, and a lot of the times you say, why are you exempting all of these bags? And the answer is because these are the bags at checkout are the easiest ones. We can get the highest return, the most impact with the least amount of complexity.
Yeah.
You know, when we broach the topic of what about the barrier bags that I put my Brussels sprouts in? And that's really to collect the Brussels sprouts. Some people put bananas in it. It's like they don't really need a bag. But it's a little bit more complicated to get rid of those bags. Then you get to the bags like the double opening bags for dry cleaning. I mean, I've never picked up dry cleaning without a double opening bag, so I don't know what it would be like as an experience. Maybe you bring your suitcase with you. But it's another point of complexity.
The cleaners down here has they sell you initially like for $10
your bag.
A bag, and you bring that all
and
the
you
time.
Bring it back.
But it's a heavy duty bag.
Yeah.
It's a storage bag as well.
If you get your box of prescription medicine that's inside a paper bag that's stapled, and then they put that inside a plastic bag, that bag is exempt. Because we don't want to impact the pharmaceuticals. Why you need the box in the paper and the plastic?
Nice.
But we pulled it out so that you don't get into that complicated topic. But the idea is eventually you peel back some of these exemptions where it's appropriate.
Now tell me, I know that Barrington ran into an issue with like a thickness of the bag. How did they deal with that? And is there any version of a plastic, thicker, considered to be more reusable bag that is acceptable in this ordinance?
Sure. That's a great question. The ordinance they went forward with, and really was the standard ordinance across the board, was this nominal thickness of 2.25 mil, which... I was new to this field, and a mil is actually a thousandth of an inch. I thought it was millimeters, but it's a thousandth of an inch, so it's very small. And industry came back, and they created this EcoLoop bag, which was 2.5 mils thick. So then people introduced the concept of, well, let's add 4 mil thickness as a means. Like, we'll create this bag, it has to be so thick. What we did in Aquinic Island, as well as in Jamestown and Bristol, is we added in that the handles have to be stitched and not heat-fused. So it doesn't matter how thick the bag is. You've got to have a stitched handle. Then you get into the question of what's the definition of a handle, and it's a strap or anything that you would hold a bag with. So, so even if it's a plastic bag that has a cutout, that's still considered the handle, and it has to be stitched. So we feel that the strongest part of our ordinance is that the definition of a reusable bag is that it has to have stitched handles. And when you put that in place, no one's going to attach a handle with material stitched to it, to plastic.
So how isn't Ulta on the island still like using those thick plastic bags?
Some of the thick plastic bags, no, Ulta should not be. No, and if they are, it's a violation.
Okay.
Right now, we have an issue with Five Below.
Yeah.
Because Five Below has a 4 mil bag with a handle, but it's not stitched. And we also have an issue with Ulta.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, Ulta. I thought you said Aldi's.
No, Ulta, sorry.
So Ulta...
Because they have those little tiny bags that are really heavy.
Right, so they are incurring the fine.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to be broaching the topic with the town council in May as to where that money's going. So I want to make sure they're collecting it. But our understanding from Ulta is that it had to go back up the food chain to corporate to figure out what their strategy was going to be. And for them, they decided that they were going to just incur the fine. So they have beautiful pink bags that have, you know, they're too thin and they have plastic handles.
Yeah.
We had an issue with Tito's Tacos. That was fixed.
Tito's.
Yeah, we had an issue with the Dollar Store. That was fixed. We had an issue with Boro Noodles. That was fixed. So we really didn't have too many, and I think after we reported a few of the violations, like, people just changed their ways.
What's the fine on it? Is it a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly fine?
Right. So the hardship variance, the enforcement, and the violations are truly up to the municipality because they don't really change the spirit of the ordinance itself. In Newport, it's you go straight to a fine. You get a letter within 14 days. If you don't change your behavior, you get a fine. In Middletown and Portsmouth, it's tiered. So you get a letter, and you get a small fine. You might get a larger fine, and then you might have to go to court. And that's really up to you. I mean, in Jamestown, they don't have a municipal court, so you couldn't really add that component to it. That's really the discretion of the town. But you have to have some type of teeth in it. It can't just be a warning.
Yeah.
Can you describe, out of the communities that have adopted it, I think that Middletown might be the one that compares to us in terms of the type of commercial base, particularly thinking about some of the bigger stores that they have. How did that community in particular deal with this? You haven't mentioned them. You kind of mentioned Portsmouth Town Council was a little iffy.
Right.
Newport, I imagine, has a lot of businesses, but it's a lot of restaurants and bars. But Middletown seems to have a lot of the big box stuff, a lot of those chain stores.
We don't have a ton of big box
Newport
stuff.
Newport has Walmart. And
But I'm thinking of, like, how does it compare to, like, our district where we've got, like, a CVS, a Benny's. Well, we used to have a Benny's, a Job Lot. You know, like that kind of commercial, like, we've got a lot of mixed chains in there.
Middletown wasn't too far behind Newport. They put it in Portsmouth. I mean, to put it in perspective, Newport passed the ordinance on March 8th, and Middletown passed it on May 1st. So they were literally, you know, almost in lockstep, almost different by a couple of council meetings. No one from the business community in Middletown objected to the ordinance. There were probably already a half a dozen small local restaurants and takeout places that had already switched over and were already trying to promote that to increase their business. So there were no issues. You know, we vocally mentioned businesses like CVS because we did try to put in a uniform and consistent ordinance so that, you know, if you're doing distribution to a particular area, that, you know, the truck can have the right bags. That was a point that Tracy Anthony from Clemens brought up, is that in Massachusetts, there's 63 ordinances. A lot of it has to do with the history of when they were put in place, but some of them have different rules. So if you have this small mom-and-pop shop with 7 stores and you have 4 rules, it's like, that's complicated. That's actually not fair. So we've really tried to make sure, and we've actually had some interesting comments from people that said that it would probably have been, this is an interesting comment that we heard was from the environmental group, was you should have put in a different ordinance in every town, because then that would have incentivized the state level to rise up to create a uniform ordinance. And that was an argument and perspective that I'd never thought about. I was like, you know, introducing chaos. But there's a point to it, because the fear could be is that if we already have a uniform, consistent ordinance, just let the 5 counties in Newport and in Rhode Island figure it out. I'm not concerned that it's going to happen, but it's a different take on it. In Massachusetts, that's certainly the case, that they do have some variances. I can't speak to what the variances are, but I'm aware that they do exist. So we were, you know, there's five CVSs on Equidnacon. You know, there's three Stop and Shops. So when they click the box that says what type of bag to bring, and again, they have distribution, so they're not buying it. It's just coming from a warehouse.
But have all the entities, all of the East Bay committed to the takeout food package? Because that's one that's been exempted in some when you look at it nationally.
Right. They've embraced it.
Yeah. What's their alternative? Because obviously the last thing you want to do when you're taking something home is to have it end up on the sidewalk. So,
right.
And paper isn't always best for that experience.
I don't know. Put it that way. I mean, working in Middletown, we do take out there on a regular basis, and it seems to all be in paper, and it's fine.
Right.
It was a behavior change. I frequent Becky's Barbecue.
Yes.
You know, they put a lot of, unfortunately, foam containers, and I was like, how is this going to work? And it works perfectly fine. And actually brings awareness to the fact that there's these foam containers, and other people are using somewhat compostable material. So you start to have this conversation with the business, and it's like, wow, the customers want something else. It's just a matter of time. You know, I was asked, you know, how are we going to save the planet? Is it going to be all legislation or behavior change? And I think it's going to be like 20% legislation and 80% behavior. We might need to get rid of a few more things. But once the movement happens, it's like, we can't, you know, the linear economy is not really going to work for these unsustainable products. And that's really where this conversation is going. And that's what we really tried to promote with all of the outreach and work that we did. Was it really wasn't about the bag, it was about the platform of the bag, about making better choices in your day-to-day lives with the products that you use, and starting to question all of it. I mean, you know, you can fill the little container up with soap in your bathroom, but you can't buy a refill for your deodorant or your toothpaste. It's like, why can't you, you know? So you start asking these questions.
For all the ordinances in Rhode Island, which to my knowledge, it's Aquidnet, it's Jamestown, it's Barrington, and it's Block Island, are they all based on that same model ordinance right now?
They are. And in fairness, the Barrington ordinance is really where it started. And we were well aware of it, but we did not help write it. We brought it to Newport and revamped it and added some new language to it to bring it up to speed to make it a tighter ordinance. That ordinance then propagated into Middletown and Portsmouth and Jamestown. At the same time, we shared it with our friends in New Shore and Block Island. To the best of my knowledge, it's very similar, but I have not looked. Meanwhile, some of the groups from Barrington that helped out in the beginning helped to bring about the issue in Bristol. And again, I can't speak to if it's the same, but to the best of my knowledge, it's very similar.
Oh, Bristol
passed it. So Bristol has one too?
Yeah, so now there's actually seven communities that have passed an ordinance. I believe that, I don't know the go-live date for Bristol, but I know that Portsmouth is September 1st, and I believe that Block Island is January 1st of 2019. But all seven have passed it. So it's live in five communities.
Very nice. And any other communities here on the West Bay that are thinking about it? I mean, we're aware that Narragansett Concom is thinking about it. Have you heard from any others?
I should have mentioned, Rob, I'm learning the difference between towns and villages, so I have to understand this. I've been working with a group in North Kingston, Maura Harrington, and the Conservation Commission.
Yep.
They are interested in this topic. So, you know, and with the residents that reached out from South Kingston, they have drafted a petition of sorts that has language that references all of Washington County.
With the residents from South Kingston, you said?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
A woman by the name of Laura Wallace.
Is that the one that via the emails
Girl Scout
that we've
Splash RI.
So she's coming to the town council, the SK town council, at some point, on Monday.
Right.
And she's coming with basically kind of a we should do this.
Right.
And that's when I jumped in and I said, you know, that's great,
right.
But they might say our Concom's working on this right now. So it seemed like this was a good place to catch it.
And I thought that she had put me on the docket to come back here like May 14th.
That may well be. There's actually multiple pushes going on right now. I actually think this thing may get ahead of you guys if you're not careful.
And
I've heard from several groups on this topic. There have been several letters to the council in the last couple of weeks.
So it's like,
and there's been a request for a presentation by a large group.
I also want to remind us that the Barrington ordinance was written by the same solicitor as South Kingstown Town Solicitor Mike Arcillo. So that if that's an easy way, because that's a comprehensive ordinance, and if we can go in that direction,
right.
You know, that's he's a resource for that.
I mean, when we created Newport, once it was vetted, I won't say that the towns do work together. I think there's an opportunity to work better. But once they saw that we had an ordinance that was drafted that had all the right language, we basically just went into their public records and changed the chapter numbers and changed the wording and just presented it and said the ordinance is really available, it's ready to go, mm-hmm. It just needs to be codified and vetted by the town solicitor. It's pretty much good to go. With the understanding that, do you have a hardship variance? What is the enforcement and what are your violations? Those don't really have anything to do with the ordinance itself. It's really the mechanics of operating it.
Do those actually, are they in the, are any of those pieces in the ordinance, or are they basically a sub-document, a regulatory document?
They are. And another thing to point out, I'm just going to share because I'm now visually looking at the ordinance. In the state of Rhode Island, there's a law for the Restore program, which is the collection of plastic film. And it's actually a state law. There's some laws by the state that aren't enforced, which is unfortunate, like business recycling. But the state law says that you have to have a Restore program to collect plastic films if you have, I think it's over 3,000 square foot store. So CVS's, Shaw's, the bigger stores will have these. That's an important element that's in the ordinance that it says that, and the Restore program has to stay in place.
What do you mean plastic films?
Well, like right now, if you bring a plastic bag, you can bring it back to Shaw's and
Spencer. Oh, yeah, I know, right? Yeah, yes.
If you have a Ziploc bag, you can cut the zip off and take that bag. And now they've expanded it to that includes films. So it could be rigid plastic as well as stretchable plastic, which is really great because there's a lot of rigid plastic in our lives for that. There have been cases in California, for example, that they passed plastic bag ordinances, but they didn't have a state law that mandated that the plastic film recycling stay in place, and so they started to see the ill effects of that because all that film started to go to the landfill. So fortunately, Rhode Island, we've put that in place in the ordinance that the Restore program has to stay in place. So, I mean, I went to the store the other day and I brought plastic film back, including now the biggest violator is the bag that my newspaper comes in, you know? So all those are still going back. So in fairness to a small shop like Clemens or Belmont, compared to the bigger shops, that part of your supply chain and logistics will still be in place, that you'll still be collecting these large bags that you can smash down and someone will have to come pick them up and they'll get put into, made into Trex tiles or into playground sets.
So is that truly a requirement that it actually make it to a recycling? Because the suggestion was that they may be offering to collect it, but is it really getting to be reused or just disposed of ultimately?
I hope that everything gets recycled
on
this planet. I don't know where it all goes.
Exactly.
I do know that the you know, Rhode Island Resource Recovery, if you go there for a tour, the beginning part of the tour is they explain to the facility and you sit on these Trex tiling benches and they let you know that that's where plastic bag recycling goes to make these tiles. But I can't speak to how it actually happens. It goes somewhere and hopefully it's recycled.
But in the meantime, things like marine shrink wrapping, which is now required, it is a very good recyclable element and generally limited contamination, that it seems to be a hard and fast requirement. And for the ocean state, it's good.
Because absolutely.
But that's an example of a film, but it may be more inclined to be more readily a usable and cost-effective product to recycle and repurpose.
Sure.
And essentially repurpose for the same purpose, for that matter.
Yeah, ideally that's what it would be.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of other... That's an important element to make sure it's clear that would be in the ordinances.
Yeah.
Is that infrastructure would still be in place.
So does the ordinance actually change the approach of these stores that require by state law to do it, or is it just the ordinance makes mention of it?
It just mentions it has to stay in place.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it's more of a cursory nominal mention,
right?
Basically to kind of help remind people that this ordinance is in keeping with state law, which does suggest that we should be doing the best we can with the plastics that exist.
Right. It's also preventing a loophole from developing. Mm-hmm. If you've got an ordinance that says you can't hand out plastic bags, why should I have the infrastructure for taking them back? Because mm-hmm. I can't put them
yeah,
out
right.
there, so
right.
you can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The state statute's in place, but I'm exempt from it because I don't participate in that
yeah.
stream anymore.
Pretty sure the state statute would trump any local ordinance. So if the state mandates through a statute that you have to, any institution above a certain square footage has to do it.
Right.
I'm pretty sure whether they enforce it is another thing.
Sure.
And it's unclear whether they actually enforce it.
I mean, I shop at Shaw's, and when I enter the store, there are three containers there, and they've stayed there. They're emptied. So nothing has changed from their infrastructure.
Yeah.
I can't say that I've looked at every drugstore. It might be easy for CVS or Walgreens to say, I've got five stores, I'm going to pull it out of one of them. I don't know if that's happened, but
yeah.
It's only the big stores that have that as a requirement. So that had to stay in place.
Yeah. For our community, I think it's probably Belmont, Shaw's, and then probably maybe CVS is that big, and then Rite Aid is
yeah.
that big. I don't know if you guys can think of any others off the top of your head.
Big Ocean State? Job lot?
Maybe.
Yeah, they're so deceiving in how
I know.
The stores are set up. Like, how big are they?
I don't know, but there's a lot of people that go into them.
Yeah.
There are.
Yeah.
They fit a lot into a small
Yes.
That's an understatement.
And getting to another part of the ordinance, there is a consistent across all of them. If a bag is larger than 28 by 36 inches, that those are exempt. So if you go to buy five pillows,
that bag is
excluded.
They are giant.
But all of these exemptions, it's just really a matter of time before the community, you know, decides to put momentum towards that. I mean, if I start to see these large plastic bags scattered in the watershed in the coastline, we'll do something about it.
Yeah.
But really, it was those nuisance plastic bags. So, and to point out just another difference is, in Barrington, they took the approach of the environmental issue, stewardship, why it makes sense. There really wasn't a data set behind the ordinance. Like, well, how bad is the problem in Barrington? And that was a problem that surfaced in Portsmouth just months ago. Was residents would say, I don't see any bags in Portsmouth. And I have a resident from Portsmouth who walked the street every day, and we brought in all these bags. We're like, they're all on the road. Shaw's, Market Basket, Clemens. But in Newport and Middletown and Portsmouth, we had data to back it up. So we collected thousands of bags every year, both in the watershed, the streets, and the beaches. So again, it's citizen science data, so it's reliable. It wasn't done by, say, professionals, but it was done by people who care about the environment. So we at least had data to back it up. And I don't necessarily know if you need that data. I think it's well known that, you know, we have this fifth season in New England called, you know, bags and trees. I mean, people see them everywhere, you know. And they'll all go away. In 3 months, you won't. Half the litter in town will be gone because it's vegetation.
So help explain to me if SK was interested in becoming a little more live with its outreach. And I don't know if we're there yet. I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes after a couple of council presentations. And the council might say, that's very interesting. We're currently awaiting our CONCOM to give us some feedback from, you know, their outreach. And so it might kind of be back in our court. But let's say we do our business owner outreach. And then what would Clean Ocean Access be able to provide if we were like, we're ready for a little bit more of a broader campaign?
Right. Well, we're here to help facilitate it. Ideally, I would look for members of the community. I mean, you guys technically are the community, but you also serve at the pleasure of the council. So we'd love to have more of the community involved to help and facilitate their desire. But I think there's letters that have initiated that. I think that doing a community meeting, perhaps at multiple locations. In Jamestown, we held two community meetings. We invited people. At one, 15 people came, and another, well, the first one, 25 people came, and at the second one, about 14 people came. So we gave an advance notice. People came out. Portsmouth, we did the same thing. I think doing a survey with enough lead time is a good way to get more information. because some people might not want to come out to a meeting and speak their objections to it.
Do you have a copy of the 7 or 9 questions?
I do, and I would, I can provide it to you. It's online for Portsmouth. Richard Tablitsky up there helped put it together, so, I would give him the authority to take ownership of it. I just helped to put it together. And I'd be happy to bring people from, we could bring you could have all types of debate. I mean, we could bring people here from the American Chemistry Council that will provide a very persuasive alternative perspective on the topic. We'll bring people from the environmental community that will provide a very different perspective. And then I think that would, I'm not suggesting you do one or both, but you could do that. I think just providing a forum and an opportunity for people to provide their input. I also think that it's good to emphasize that there should be a voluntary compliance period. In general, it was anywhere from 6 to 9 months. I think in New Shore and Block Island, it passed, in January of this year, and it's not going to go live until January of next year.
12 months voluntary.
In Newport, we did have an environmental philanthropist who donated $10,000 and we bought 9,000 bags and we passed them out at community events. That did not happen in Middletown or Portsmouth. It did happen in Newport, where 17% of the community lives below the poverty level. I hope that all the bags went to them. I know that not all of them did, but you could have a bag campaign. You could have an art contest with the school to design the South Kingston bag. You could have a bag sharing program at the farmer's market. I think there's a lot of ways that you can move forward with it, and we'd be happy to help facilitate it. I won't say it's a long drive, but we don't have boots on the ground over here. But I'd be happy to come over to help out. But I think that there's a pretty good recipe of how to move this forward. And as I learned as being impatient in my mid-40s here that, Take your time with this, right? Because if it takes a year to get it done, and 10 years from now it will be live for 9 years, and you won't remember that it took a year to get done. So, it took 22 months for us to get the island switched over. Glad it was over. I pulled this folder out for the first time since late February, but it's a good feeling.
Yeah, and I would assume, you guys hit the ground communicating with the councils and whatever subcommittees, they probably coming in a little cold. At least in this community, you've got a council that is aware. They basically have directed this group to take on this research effort.
Right.
And really, where we're at right now is just to take the temperature of the community. No one's kind of committed to let's draft an ordinance. It's let's commit to understanding what the temperature of the community is. So you've got, I think, a little bit of a leg up in terms of some buy-in that this is worth looking at.
Right. In Newport. And I apologize if I share this in a scattered way. In Newport of May of 2016, they made a motion directing the Newport Energy and Environment Commission to research the topic and to come back in January of 2017. So what the Newport Energy and Environment Commission did was, it was May, and I was like, wow, this is going to take a long time. We put together a public presentation in September. We invited everyone to come. Counselors came. Community members came. Then we put together a draft ordinance. We provided it back in December, and then it got back to the council in January, and they voted it, et cetera. So that was one approach where there was a direction back to a committee to take action to do the outreach. In Middletown, that approach wasn't taken, and in Portsmouth, it was just kind of done through the administration, less so through a commission. So I think that you're kind of in that similar situation, that you've gotten some direction to take a step. So I think having public workshops, outreach activities, perhaps a survey, really to gauge the community awareness. And I think through it all, the spirit of it is start to bring your own reusable bag, because that's the behavior change that has to happen. I wouldn't be here advocating for paper. It's advocating that if you switch to the bag, you switch to the bottle. You question why you use the straw and you stop releasing the balloons. And that's where we're trying to take this.
Did
the survey questions go to just the general public and businesses as well, or did you have separate ones for business community?
Yeah, so the survey that was actually publicly released was available for anyone to fill it out. It was done pretty much electronically, except for some hard copies at Clemens Market, as well as at Town Hall. Internally, there was a business survey done to businesses in the town of Portsmouth. I don't believe that information was ever publicly shared, but I know that there was an outreach step done on that component. And I think that there were quite a few businesses that said, nah, it's not going to impact me either way, that did have a retail component. I mean, obviously the construction companies that said no impact, it just made sense. But that information, you could probably follow up with the town of Portsmouth. I don't think it was ever made public, but I do believe that it happened. I say that because I saw a spreadsheet one day in a meeting, but the real request from the council was to do a survey to the community, and so that's really the step that happened in the community. Really? And it was open for about 3 weeks.
Very nice. And out of all the communities that have passed the bag in Rhode Island, have any of them adopted a fee structure?
No. No. And Providence is the first to bring that on. And
then it was vetoed.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're going to carve it out.
Yeah. I mean, I suggested to Director Coit as part of doing the Clean Seas Pledge with all the ocean races to take out the fee and let's get this thing through. You know, I was out in California last month for the International Marine Debris Conference, and it was a heated debate between the group in Hawaii and the group in California. The California group and the attorneys are like, we need the fee. The group in Hawaii is like, it confuses things, it's slowing it down, no fee. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they brought us into the conversation and kind of threw us under the bus a little bit, and then we said, well, in our rooms, it says the reasonable bags have to have stitched handles. Thought about that. So it's like, because yeah, that's what they're trying to prevent, yeah. Right? They're trying to make sure that there's not a loophole.
Literally.
Yeah, literally, you know. But I do think it's fair if a business wants to pass on the cost, there's different ways to do it. You can have a straight out fee, or you can add, you know, 0.005 cents to half your product. I mean, I won't say it's easy to reclaim the cost, because it's not, but it's. Compared to, you know, the fluctuation in produce.
And out of the communities you worked with, who did you find were the most, taking political members out, taking a council person or, you know, that who's trying to look out for the constituents, really actual groups vocally opposed? Was it businesses or was it consumers that, you know, for whatever reason, I like that for my dog poop. I like that because I'm used to it. You know, where did you hear the voice of opposition?
Yeah. Well, we heard it on social media. And I reached out to, I communicated with every person on social media, and I actually tried to organize the opposition. I said, you guys need to come to the meetings. Because at a local level, social media does not influence council votes. At a national level, perhaps it's very effective. But locally, the councils aren't looking at what's going on Facebook, at least not on a quick, maybe they are here. On a quick line, they weren't. So what we did actually was every opposition that came out on social media, we actually used that as part of, to build our frequently asked questions. You know, well, what do I do for my waste bin in my bathroom? You know, how do I pick up my dog waste? How do I, you know, introduce a different, behavior for the behavior that I actually transformed in the last 20 years when I started to deal with these plastic bags? So, you know, that's where we heard it.
So it sounds like it was more from your common man.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't. I mean, I guess we've almost, maybe we've been imagining that there'll be opposition from our businesses, but it sounds from your perspective that the businesses are really on board pretty quickly.
I would say that, you know, being on, I'd be cautious on saying that.
They were tolerant.
Yeah, I think they were tolerant of it. I think that they recognized that there was a groundswell of community interest in moving in this direction. Mm. And I think as a business, you've got to make a decision. Do I put my foot down because it's going to cost me more money? Or do I introduce the risk to my customer base? Or do I accept the fact? I mean, Provençal Bakery in Middletown, I think it cost them almost 15 cents more to switch from plastic bags to paper bags. But everyone still goes there for lunch, you know? Mm. It's an inconvenience to them. It takes up more space, it costs them more money, they can't buy as many, they have to get it replenished more often. But it's okay. You know, they didn't, if you had asked Brenda, who owns the store, she probably would have said, this isn't going to work for me. But she didn't get to that point. So that type of communication, and I just put those words in her mouth, but I mean, I've talked to her about the cost impact. So, but no one got to the point that they actually came forward and said, this is going to hurt my business. Clemens was perhaps the first group, the only group that almost got to that point, but that was really the concern of the council speaking on behalf of Clemens.
Are you feeling that there's sort of a vaccination happening as well? CVS has been through this now 7 times, so CVS is going to be okay with it. Shaw's have been through this 7 times plus all of Massachusetts.
In Newport, for the final council meeting, a gentleman from the plastic industry did show up. Mm. The only reason I know who he is, he's very tall, he has white hair, and I've seen him before at the State House. And he didn't know where to go, so I told him to go upstairs. And the council chamber was packed with people, and true to Newport form, you know, they announced at the start of it, we're going to vote for this, but we'll still listen to all of you. So everyone talked, he never spoke. In Middletown, no one from the industry showed up, and Portsmouth, the same thing. Where in Providence, it was a totally different beast. I mean, everyone was there. The thing that was missing was where were the little kids and the grandparents? You know, I mean, that's the approach that we took, was it was the multi-generational community support.
Yeah. Weren't they showing up at the State House, though, when it was in committee?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, they showed at the State House. They showed up in Providence when it was in Providence. I think when it's at that level, they show up. But, you know, it would be interesting what would happen here in Washington County, because I think, you know, if this tide turns as well, that really is an upswelling for the state of Rhode Island. But.
Yeah, as an aside, I received a letter in the mail from somebody within the plastics industry that basically said, we're aware that you're thinking about a ban. Did you know all the good things that plastic does? And did you know the paper's not that much better? You know, it was a very interesting letter.
Wow. Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, like, I think it was because there was a newspaper article, so it triggered, you know, like someone has a Google search. They've got a Google search for plastic bag ban or plastic bag ordinance. And when a community comes up and it hits that Google search, they're like, send them a letter.
Oh, yeah. It's like clockwork. And you can talk to the fellow counselors, and more so counselors, I don't think the committees would get it in the other communities, but everyone gets that. To talk about that for a moment, move in the direction of biodegradable or compostable bags, like, I understand that. The thing that we struggle with as a community in the state of Rhode Island is we don't have the infrastructure to do the type of composting that's required for these type of bags. It requires high heat, turning the pile quite often. You could go to PF Trading in Massachusetts and do it, but then that changes the whole waste stream, taking the waste out of the state. So this is one of the cases where the industry is trying to play catch up with alternatives, and I get that, but I think when I work with the group that's looking at reimagining and reinventing these products is, I think we should be focused on compostable materials for something that you truly have a single-use purpose. You don't need a single-use bag. You know, we don't want to perpetuate the single-use mentality. So while I applaud the effort, I don't support the biodegradable and compostable bags. We don't have infrastructure for it, and two, because we should switch to a reusable bag. And they'll, you know, tell you why the compostable bags work. And plastic is a great advantage. You know, it's just we have a huge responsibility first to figure out how it's impacting us on the planet. You know, where is it all going?
To the ocean.
But yeah, they'll reach out.
Yeah. I think that you would be a great resource to us as we go through this.
Happy to help.
I think that we're at the first step, which is, I think we're curious to see what happens and what the council's reaction is to some of the presentations that are being brought to them, and who knows if that changes our approach. But I think our first step is we don't need to reinvent the wheel with some of the great resources you've got to, like, basically, what's the messaging, what's the reason why we're considering a bag ban, and then, you know, the frequently asked questions that we've seen, at least we took a look at the Block Island frequently asked questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if they mimicked what you've already done.
Probably.
I mean, that was great. Because it's, you know, that's the sort of stuff that, you know, for us at our initial level, where we're not trying to get the, you know, but we're trying to get to those people that are really going to have some impacts, and they're going to be concerned, and they really want to see the details.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any of those frequently asked questions get to some of the points you just described in the ordinance, almost like the logistical details of the stitched handles, you know, those pieces. That stuff that I think people would be very interested, we should be, you know, knowledgeable about if we're going to poll businesses on their, you know, opinions and approaches. So when they're asking us, how does that really work? We can say, here's how we think it would.
Yeah.
I think those materials would be really helpful for us so that we would feel very comfortable beginning that outreach process.
Sure, I'm happy to help. Like, essentially, I think it's all links to PDFs on our website, and I can do that at all.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you think we're doing this the right way in terms of a quieter approach with the businesses? And something you've mentioned a few times is that the businesses come on board when they feel that there's an upswell.
Well, I think that they don't express opposition when there's a lot of community support behind it. That isn't to say that they might not support it, but they just didn't step up to express it.
Interesting.
I think that it's good to reach out to the businesses, but I think that, I mean, your time is precious. To talk about this in this context is excellent for the community to make the right decision, but it's not just a single conversation about the bag and about the price. It's about the behavior change. And when you bring all these factors together, I think it becomes easier to bring people to the table to talk about it. I mean, especially if you bring a business that has a concern and you bring 20 of their customers and you have this open dialogue, it's like, we're going to do this. And, you know, you're still going to have to, I mean, I haven't been to Europe, but my understanding there is there's places that they don't offer a bag at all. Mm-hmm. If you don't bring a bag, you have to buy a bag. So, you know, we haven't gotten to that point yet here in Rhode Island. Like, we have all these paper bags, but, you know, if we use more paper bags, we can grow more trees. And if we use more plastic bags, we're just going to keep killing the ocean. You know, I mean, that's kind of where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'd say take your time, be thorough, be patient, take the long view on it, and really link it into what worked in Jamestown. Was they had an initiative called Sustainable Jamestown, so it was just linked into it. It was about stormwater, it was about green infrastructure, it was about trash at the beach, it was about plastic bags. So they kind of carved it into this whole Sustainable Jamestown initiative.
Yeah. We've got no lack of that. We have a sustainability committee, fairly newly formed, still under a year. They're very interested in this. They're not, you know, they're going to be willing to step in and help with communication, but they don't want to step on our toes while we're leading the effort. We have an economic development committee that represents people that kind of would immediately jump to what's the negative impact to businesses, and we're trying to wrap our arms around them early.
Yeah.
And say, we want you to help us communicate with the businesses. Right. And so they feel like they've got a role. And I think in the end, you know, making sure we're talking to the right businesses and someone suddenly doesn't come out of the woodwork midstream and say, yeah, I never heard a thing about this and I should have been, you know, I'm an important local business person. Making sure we're kind of prepared for that.
Right.
I think there's no lack of potential, you know, agencies and people at work. But I think one thing you said is, you know, we're all town appointed. We're all kind of basically trying to gauge information, but no one really wants to be an advocate yet. You know,
right.
I think everyone on this group, they're on the ComCom for a reason.
Yeah.
But we can't really take an advocacy position when our job is to kind of neutrally observe what the community's temp is. But it sounds like something that is part of it is starting to engage the populace that can be advocates that come out and freely say, this is why we should do it.
Right.
It's a good idea because of X, Y, and Z.
And to add more on the business side, the Chamber of Commerce in both communities kind of took a no opinion approach on it. They were basically neutral. They weren't for or against it. It was just something that didn't percolate that they had to have a position. Rhode Island Resource Recovery, years ago, did not support the ban. Now they have a neutral position. I think the last time I heard from Crystal up at Rhode Island Resource Recovery was they were going to reconsider where they were at, because I think they were going to be putting in a bigger campaign about collection of bags. So. But in any event, I think, you know, we have to revisit these particular touch points on the conversation. You should engage the chamber. We should engage Rhode Island Resource Recovery. You know, the tourism aspect of it is something to consider. We've reached out to Discover Newport, and we've suggested that they find some funds to provide some reusable bags to people. But we obviously have a lot of tourists in Newport. Out in Telluride, out west, they have these little cute bags that they provide to everyone that comes into town. It's a little bit of a different mix because you have that's a little bit of a high-income tourist. Whereas in Newport, you could have people that come for a day trip that's all they can afford. So tourism has a different definition.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to promote it, right? South County, South Kingston cares about the environment. We've gotten rid of plastic bags.
Yeah. Have you seen the Charlestown bag?
Is it ugly?
I have not.
We consider that.
The Rose Farm.
Oh, yeah, the Charlestown has a unique program. They decided they didn't want to go for a full bag ban, so they created their own town-sponsored reusable bag program, where literally it's the GIS guy at the town ended up with this because it became his pursuit of passion, and now he has to do it. They found a great deal to get these bags with the decal. They're like these great, I don't know what the
it's
material
almost a woven,
is.
It's like
and they've got like a great logo on them, and they, you know, we're working with businesses. Can you sell these? You know, let's push this. They're selling like hotcakes because I think your average person that comes to Charlestown is like, that's a great cheap souvenir. Yeah. You get that awesome looking bag for $5. Like, I'm getting that.
And it's large enough to be a beach bag.
But their tip on it was like, we're not going to ban, but we want to do an educational piece. And I think they intended it as like a pre-ban. But at this point, like literally, there's a guy at Town Hall that's still responsible for ordering like thousands of these a month and helping to distribute them to businesses. So he's basically like, I've now become like a bag seller for the town.
Right. When I traveled the last time, it was very easy for TSA to go through my bag because it was a reusable bag. It was just open. It was convenient. It was right there.
No, I've got one downstairs if you want to see what Charlestown's selling. But it's attractive. We looked at it and we thought about it. And then basically it was determined that it's way too much time on a municipal staff person to basically sell bags when that's not really the town's job.
Come on, Doug, you don't want to do that?
Yeah, no, because I know where it would be. I'm like, Doug, you're going to sell bags now.
Doug Magnet.
The chamber.
They could do it.
I'm not at all surprised that the chamber is neutral on this. They do not represent the Shaws, and they represent, you know, restaurants and construction firms, and it's a much, much more diverse group of people. Mm. And this probably does not have a major impact on most of their membership. A bag program where they're selling those bags, maybe.
Yeah.
So we're going to make the council sell them.
That might be an interesting thing to bring up with them. But any other questions for Dave while we've got him here?
Thank you.
That was great.
No, you're welcome.
Let's be in touch. I'd love to get those links and then we can start thinking about a local messaging piece.
Sure. I'll revisit this and I'll provide you back the links.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think for the most part, North Kingston is about in the same position right now. I've been working with Philip Dyer, who's on the commission over there, and we're almost at a point of creating a survey.
Oh, interesting. So
he's been tasked with creating the survey, and apparently I am too.
Okay.
So I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. What we did in Portsmouth is just fine.
Let's just use that. Yeah.
Sure. Laura in South Kingston is trying to draft a petition because she's showing the Plastic Ocean movie in about five locations in the next 4 weeks. Tomorrow night it's at the Ryan Center at URI, so they're going to be signing petitions. And I guess they're going to end up here.
I don't know what the petitions are going to end up at some point.
Yeah, and she basically took our position statement as to why it makes sense, and instead of being worded from a Clean Ocean Access point of view, it's worded as citizens of South Kingston. And instead of us saying that we collected 6,000 bags, it says, and Clean Ocean Access did that. Yeah. But besides that, it's the same position and rationale.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear back from Laura, but I think she's basically, I've got my path and I'm walking it.
Yeah.
I'm glad you guys are also thinking about it. And it was a little like, oh, do you want to show us your movie? She's like, yeah, I think we're showing it enough places already. So I think she's got her marching order. She wants to bring this to a head to the council.
Right. I think there's Girl Scouts involved.
Yeah. There are Girl Scouts. We have
it's hard to resist Girl Scouts.
The Bridgewater Middle School students are presenting to us in May. Next meeting, we're going to have Curtis Corner Middle School students presenting to us. They basically said, what can we do to help? Let's present to the council. And I said, you know, I think if you go to the council right now, I don't know, they may just say, you know, that's great. Thank you for that information. We're currently waiting our CONCOM to, you know, potentially deliver us some research. So I said, what they're going to do for us is they wanted to create a product. And if they're going to create a multimedia product, I said, that's great. That could be very useful, like a multimedia product from the next generation saying, you know, this is why we need to get rid of plastic. And I said, we'd love to see that at the CONCOM, and then that could be something that is brought forward when we want to say, here, just more voices in the conversation when we bring it to a head after we've kind of wrapped our arms and we've done a survey, we've done the business outreach, you know, hey, here's information that was developed by students, kind of speaking for the voice of, you know, the future.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, if you're kind of looking at it as like, we'd love to have more, you know, tools in the toolbox of like, you know, not like, you know, we don't have a set outcome, but like,
yeah,
you know, this is information that's helpful to make, you know, help a decision maker understand what's at stake. Yeah, it is. So I think we've got some students getting involved, you know, maybe from a couple of different sources now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we had students of all ages participate. And it was really organic. And we let people know,
yeah,
this is when it's happening. We didn't organize who was going to talk, who was going to show up. It just happened. So
yeah,
people from this high to that high,
yeah, we'll take
different
it.
Points of view, it was great.
It seems like Laura's going to be local. So she's showing the video. I think she had a handful of dates she was showing it. I think she's showing it to the council, right?
There's a movie tomorrow night.
She's showing them a movie.
At the Ryan Center. It's the Plastic Ocean movie.
How long is that?
It's too long. It's about 100 minutes.
Oh,
right. So yeah, you're not showing that at the council.
Yeah, and then there's one on April 9th at the South Kingston High School.
Okay.
Okay.
And then there's one, and then there's events with Lifespan. And then there's one on the 23rd at an Earth. This is with Lifespan as well. And then it says I'm coming here on the 14th of May.
For the same movie?
No, just to do a presentation.
Oh, presentation to
a... But I don't know if that's just she asked me to come or if it's even visible that it's happening.
Is
I don't
it
know.
SK or...
Yeah, SK, May 14th.
Town Hall or...
It says bad council presentation, so that's what I wrote.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough.
I'm not prepared yet, but I will be.
Yeah, you seem to know what you should do. It's not going to, you know, sure,
yeah,
the news in SK isn't going to change.
Yeah.
I know that Gansett is looking at it. The one member of our commission that had been kind of corresponding with the Gansett commission is not here tonight.
Okay.
But I know that they may not be quite as far along. I think they were kind of like, well, let's see what SK does,
okay,
with this, and then maybe, you know, we'll try to ride that wave of momentum.
Sure.
But I mean, you kind of got a little corner of the, you know, Washington County region with,
right,
North Kingston, SK, and Gansett.
Yeah.
You've got Charlestown with their, you know, their cute mesh bags or the cute woven bags.
Right.
You know, you've got a little corner of momentum here as well.
Yeah.
So.
What's Westerly doing? Anything?
I don't know if they've done anything. Have you heard from them?
I have not.
But anyway, well, I think, you know, we'd love to, you know, wrap our heads around it.
Sure.
But we'd love to, you know, see the resources, and I think everything that you just described to us, you know, sounds like we're heading in a good direction, but that's really valuable information for us.
Yeah, I think so. I'll provide the links, and I'll provide the ordinance in a Word document, so if you dare to get it to the solicitor just to take a look at how it would change, I think you'll find that it's...
My guess is Mike probably was involved in the initial writing.
He signed it.
Some of the wordings will be the same, but
yeah,
for the most part, you just have to change the chapter numbers. And,
yep.
Also, we would like the survey questions, and I want to know where. You said May 14th?
Yeah.
We need to find out where to. We'll support you.
I'll ask Laura tomorrow night.
Great.
I think, I mean, how about I will send the group resources as they come to me, but one of them will be the dates of this, you know, this basically URI professor, Laura, what was her last name again?
I think she's a mom of the Girl Scouts.
Okay.
They're showing the movie at URI.
Okay.
It's with the Coastal Society, which is a group from URI.
Coastal Institute.
Coastal Resources Institute.
Okay.
And then it's with the South Kingston Recycling Club at the high school next Wednesday night. So she's organized all this.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to help with the panel discussion, so
sure.
I'm going to hopefully find people I know and put them on the panel.
Do you know the movie? Is it a locally generated movie?
Oh, Plastic Ocean?
Yeah.
I don't know where it was generated. It's about the global issue of plastic. So
okay.
It covers many dimensions.
Oh, right.
Both the science, the recycling side, the impacts to the well-being.
Yeah.
It's got a storyline to it about, you know, the health of the ocean, people's personal experience in raising a child. It's just a little bit long. And it has some really graphic features. I mean, putting your hand in a fish's stomach and pulling out lighters and toothbrushes.
Mm, that's fun.
You know?
Why are they eating lighters?
Is the 14th a council meeting?
Yes, it is.
So
I'm sure it's her.
Okay.
I know that she's been trying to get on the agenda. I thought she was going to try to work this coming Monday. That did not happen.
Right. right.
Okay.
But that did not happen because of us. It didn't happen because something happened beyond our universe.
So, I mean, for those members that are interested, I'll let you know the dates. You know, the movie might be entertaining, especially if they're showing it in so many different local locations. But then,
if you've never seen it, you should see it. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we'll have a commission meeting before the next council meeting, and you know, we'll probably have a better idea by the first Wednesday of May, you know, what things are looking like at the 14th. Mm-hmm. And if they are speaking, even if they're kind of jumping ahead, that's fine. You know, it might be that, you know, they're starting to light the fire, but it might be nice if a commission member was there and, you know, if any questions come up, could reflect on this is, you know, we're still going through our process. You know, it hasn't still on our front burner, but, you know, we envision a process that's not, we're ready with an answer in a month. So does that all make sense to folks?
Yeah, but that having been said, I think, based on what we've heard tonight, that we are a little bit behind the curve. And I think we can take steps. I don't think everything has to happen at once. For instance, I think the idea of the survey, getting it up on the town website, putting in the public notices in the newspaper saying it is up there, it's going to be there for 3 or 4 weeks, putting it on the town Facebook page, I think that can happen sooner rather than later, because I agree that leadership comes from the bottom up. And the survey, and don't forget, business people are going to be contributing to this survey as well. Yeah. I mean, we could cover a lot of birds with one stone.
You're probably right. I mean, it's not as if, oh, we'll keep it quiet, and when we talk to a business person, they'll be like, oh, I'm glad you're talking to me first. I mean, you can put a survey up and still reach out to a business person.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
I think the key is we don't want to come back to the council until we feel like we've wrapped our arms around it. And I think from what we've heard from the council, and I know that, you know, my sense from a few members there is they're going to ask the question, what did the business community think about this?
Right. And I think the survey is going to help us provide a lot of that information, because everybody's going to be responding to it, pluses and negatives.
Yeah, but so I do think that you're right, they can happen at the same time, but we definitely want to make sure we've reached out and, you know, made direct contact with that range of businesses like we talked about, and you know, heard from what they've had to say. But you know, maybe we're all just making an assumption that there's going to be more pushback there than not. It might be just, you know, hey, you know, some of them might say, I don't have a big problem with this.
Right.
You know, our range of businesses, we want to get those local guys, but we want to maybe see what a few chains would have to say, the local manager of a chain.
Yeah.
And that's the range of businesses that are going to be affected, so we want to get those range of answers.
Right. Yeah. It just seems like worthwhile due diligence. Yeah. So that it you know, you've taken that that step out ahead of things, and it begins to, in your mind, probably shape where the most sensitive points of the ordinance will be, before it emerges in writing.
Yeah. And especially, I think, hearing what you said about the hardship variance, I'm actually surprised no business has come before any of the communities yet and asked for it. Be curious to read that. If you don't mind, with the ordinances, if someone's got a sub-regulation document that talks about that hardship process, that'd be really interesting to read as well.
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, it's really just 2 to 3 sentences in the ordinance itself, and it doesn't reference anything else.
Okay.
It's just kind of boilerplate language that there is one, but I don't think anyone's approached the topic of...
Yeah, there's no criteria to say, you know, basically if you ask, we think about it. And
I actually support what Portsmouth did, was they changed that part to say it has to come back to the council.
Yeah.
So they stripped it away from the manager of making the decision, because, in fairness, it was kind of open-ended, like, what would be the criteria?
Yeah, if the council is the one to have the authority to enact the ordinance,
right,
you would think of the ones that have the authority. I mean, they can give that authority away to any member, but it without criteria, how are they supposed to interpret the will of the council?
Right,
I could see that being a tricky issue.
It's not an uncommon thing to say, according to criteria developed by, and then applied by.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a hardship waiver program. The hardship waiver program shall be administered by the Department of Public Works.
Yeah.
The Public Works Director shall promulgate regulations by which hardship shall be judged.
And, you know, that's the exact example. Like, I hadn't heard about a hardship, you know, variance or, you know, exemption.
Right.
I think if we were proposing this, you know, there's probably not a lot of people that would know that that potential exists.
Sure.
And that actually is part of all of these ordinances. if we come to the business community and we explain that up front, they'll be like, oh, okay, I'm starting to understand that I'm not trapped,
right. But
now I'm going to look at it from a little bit of a different perspective and kind of where you know, what's the push and pull and where are their positives or where do I want to make sure I'm part of the right side of this argument without feeling trapped first.
Right.
And then I think you come to the council with a little bit of a different perspective of like, you know, actually these are things that resonated with the business community as well, and there's a little more comfort around it because of that.
And the other thing I would mention that did happen in Barrington, and it could have been in Bristol, but to me it's a moot point, is they offered a sunset clause which said, oh, we'll revisit this in 2 years, and if it's not effective, we'll change this. But I think, as we all know, every law on the books is at the pleasure of the council. They can change a rule whenever they want. So the sunset clause was really just, we are going to take this back up in 2 years, as opposed to, we could take this back up at some unknown time.
Yeah.
So I don't think it changes the spirit of it, but it gives a more explicit out if someone wanted to say, okay, we're going to look at it again.
Yeah.
But and I think we didn't approach that in any other community.
Barrington had a sunset clause.
Yeah, that was where it was initiated. Yeah. So it was a big deal when it came back up. It's like everyone had to get back together. Like, what are they going to do? And that's when they said, hey, no one complained about it. No impact.
Yeah.
I don't think it was like a 5-0 vote. It probably still was 3-2 or 4-1. It voted the same way it did in the beginning.
It's funny because this is something that directly affects more behavior change than your, actually probably than your average law. In town, I mean, suddenly everyone in town has to start thinking about bringing their reusable bags, but it doesn't sound like the implementation is as difficult as the perception of the issue. It sounds like, you know, most of the communities that have passed it, you know, right. Whether in Rhode Island or elsewhere, are generally like, yeah, you know, it hasn't been a problem.
Yeah.
And this actually requires more behavior change than your a lot of other laws.
And you mentioned URI being a presence in the county here. A student URI who actually happens to work for me is looking to do her thesis on how do bag regulations actually influence behavior change beyond the bag. And this was asked at a conference in California to the international community, and no one has any data on it. So it's very interesting, because our entire approach is that it will lead to behavior change, but no one has the data. So that's going to be something that we study, is does this lead to people switching to more durable, reusable products? But that's the spirit of the ordinance, is to move in that direction. But I think, you know, Rhode Island's going to be a leader on all of these topics. I mean, we are the ocean state, so.
Yeah.
You know. Do you guys still meet after this? I'm sure you have a long agenda.
Oh. You're a big chunk of it.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet you all.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be back. Yeah, awesome. All right, anytime. May I have to be careful with the Volvo Ocean Race, but the 14th does work, so hopefully you guys come over for that event as well.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back in this room.
Yeah, great.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
I'll see you all.
Our next item of business is discussion of the Moist Farm Open Space Management Plan status update.
Sure.
And for that, you bet.
That would be me. I just wanted to let everybody know that we received one proposal in response to RFP. It was a good proposal. Out of the four consultants that we had attend our pre-bid meeting, three of them all teamed to be on this proposal. So it was sort of something made sense why, you know, like why it got narrowed down to one group. Seems like a very well-qualified firm. We made the recommendation to the council to award that contract. They did award that at a meeting earlier, their last meeting in March. So now we have basically contracting with the firm Applied Bioscience, Linda Steer, with a handful of subs. You've got Randy Collins at Beta as a sub.
He's good.
You've got Jen Judge with Gravel Hill Design as a sub. And the other sub I didn't meet. Those are the three that came to the meeting. The other one I'm actually spacing on the name, and I don't have the proposal in front of me. But so I apologize for that. But we're happy with the team. As you're aware, I mean, this is basically an update for the group, but as you're aware, the Noise Farm project is going to be steered by a task force. That task force will have representation from the CONCOM. David Flanders is our assigned.
Because I was going to ask you what direction, when this contract was put out to bid, what direction criteria were involved for them to bid on?
Oh, we did have a scope of work for that, and that's something I'd like to share with the group. I mean, we felt like, you know, for the scope of work, it became a technical matter, and at staff, we just kind of worked that out. So we can show you what right now we've got as a scope. We'd be working with the consultant to really define what the project approach and the schedule and the implementation of that is. But the scope just kind of set out basically the major tasks of, baseline assessment of the site, and so some, resource inventorying. We did suggest that this is a property where we need to do some visioning and engaging with our task force and other members that we might find to be stakeholders to say, what is the vision for this property moving forward? We have had separate conversations with Kingston Hill Academy, where it does seem like access through their property is a real possibility. That's something we're not going to need to like define or lock up with easements, because that will just, they'll be a player at the table through this planning process. But that's very positive, because otherwise it's very difficult to access that property.
Yes. Yeah.
That's a huge property with, unfortunately, along the major public right-of-way, very difficult topography. Issues to access.
Is that one of the things the consultants would be looking at, is access?
Absolutely. So they'd be looking at developing, a little bit more of a sketch plan. We've got a sense from a field analysis that it's very feasible, and we've got conversations with Kingston Hill, both staff and board, that they're open to this idea.
Yep.
I think they're looking at it as like, great, also if you're going to develop this into a resource, maybe there's a way that there could be paths that assists, them, and, they're able to take students out, as part of their own research. So.
Back up litter.
So a handful of pieces in the air, but I mean, here we are at the start of a process where we have a consultant on board, and we have, a task force, a member from the CONCOM, a member from the planning board, a member from the rec commission, myself, kind of be the project coordinator, and we'll have Rex Eberle, the park superintendent, on board as well. We're looking to schedule that meeting. I'll send an email out to our task force members, so that would be you, David, but we're looking at about 2 weeks out right now. They've given a couple of days of window, so I'm going to pull the task force and pinpoint a day. That's where that stands. Any questions about that?
With enough notice, I could schedule around it, actually. So
great. So if it was something specific that somebody needed,
if it was on a work day, I'd just reschedule if I have already.
Yeah. I think we've got a couple of days that are wide open right now, and I just want to poll the group, and I'll probably be sending that email out tomorrow.
Sure.
So that's where we stand with that. I would envision that project is going to be about a year in the making. The consultant will get going with their baseline inventory, and it'll be, our exciting part will be when they're kind of coming to us with a visioning process. What do we see? And then, kind of doing some concept, master plans, and giving us some alternatives on some different master plans. That'll be kind of like the fun phase to envision different ways that trails or access or use of the property. Beautiful property for those that have been able to get out there. Huge piece of property.
Yeah.
Some great stuff right along the trails, and then there's some great stuff off of the trails. That's all I got on that. Did anyone have any other final thoughts on next steps for the plastic bag stuff?
Only that I want us to share the survey questions, and maybe we can even finalize what we want out there at our next meeting. I mean, I really want to keep momentum going here.
Yeah.
I feel that getting a sense of what everybody else is doing got me going too, and I think we may be falling behind on it. But if we're the ones who are essentially coordinating the thrust of the project, particularly, I want us to stay on top of it. And if that's one thing we can do, like I said, not everything has to be done simultaneously. And a lot of people are going to be responding to that, business people as well. And let's throw it out there and see, like a net, see what happens.
Yeah.
See what we get.
Yeah. I think if we did that, and I'm okay with that, we want to make sure we've got our messaging documents ready as well.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
Why is the town even looking at this? Okay, we've got a link on our website with some resources on. you know, what, you know, some, I like the frequently asked questions that there are out there. If we go live with a survey, we have to have that information ready to go live as well.
Well, I think we provided a lot of good bullet points as well as the FAQs.
Yeah.
And which leads us, well, I was going to say, when we get to correspondence, I suggested to Doug that tomorrow the EDC meets, and maybe just at the very end of their meeting, under correspondence, if it's just anything at all like ours, just hand it out saying, here's what we're going to be talking about, maybe the May meeting or whatever. Mm-hmm. So just homework, take a look at it, see what you think. You know, keep it low key.
I thought the other thing that was interesting was what he said about, you know, the groundswell really affecting the community more. Yeah. Would it make sense to dovetail the survey with, you know, if they come before the town council, it's going to be in the newspaper. Then the survey goes out to the business people and they see that, you know, that might be a kind of a positive driver.
Yeah, I agree. And at a certain point, you know, we need this committee to, you know, all be on board with what the approach and process is. But then at a certain point, you know, like administrating a survey isn't the job of this committee. You can't be that nimble. So at May, you know, we can see where we stand. But if we feel like we're in a position where we have a relative handle on survey questions and we have a relative handle on the messaging, and you guys say, yeah, we think we're ready, but, you know, where are we at with that council meeting? How does this all time? Does it make sense for us to pace this where we're at? Then you guys can say, yeah, and then you can kind of authorize me to say, yeah, release that survey, you know, or, you know, if we need to make a few amendments or comments, we can do that. But to a certain degree, I think you guys need to be on board with the major concepts of what we're doing, but you don't need to be there to wordsmith the final, you know, last pieces or to, you know, that part can be done by staff. So I agree, and for us to be nimble, I think it's basically making sure this group is confident and comfortable in the process and the steps, but that staff can kind of start walking those steps at a pace that, you know, we feel, you know, if we need to do something in May to, like, let's say there's going to be a newspaper article, maybe that is a time where we want to have, you know, a survey live and ready.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's...
The May time is the beginning of the tourist season as well here, so... Yeah, we may look at opportunities even at the beaches or in some locations, some prominent input from that population.
Exactly, and this is going to be one of those we can see where we are then. And, you know, I think Dave's advice to us, which is, you know, there wasn't a need to rush, which I think he's kind of telling us because, you know, you don't want to rush an ordinance to the council, but I don't think that we're looking to rush an ordinance into anyone's hands. I think we're just timing the public engagement with when there's already news.
Yeah.
And I think I'll bring this to the EDC, and I think the EDC literally would just be waiting for their orders in terms of, yes, we'd like to engage with the businesses. Can you please reach out and make contact with five small, five medium, and five large-scale businesses? And we'd start to schedule a sit-down. I like the idea of the EDC, maybe a member of the EDC and a member of the CONCOM meeting with these businesses in a conversational way with a series of kind of set pieces that have, you know, either questions or information that we're looking to get out of it. So they're kind of standardized to some degree, but conversational and really just trying to understand what, you know, their feedback is. I just gave that as a draft. That doesn't have to be what the process looks like, but that's something that the EDC, I think, is willing to take on, and we could be looking at our May meeting. We meet the first Wednesday, they meet the first Thursday. So since I happen to staff both, it's pretty easy for me to take whatever direction we decide at that Wednesday meeting and bring it on Thursday and say, this is what we'd like to do, can we start enacting that plan? And we can have that going basically as well. So, I mean, if we're, you know, want a survey out, but we'll also want to be able to say, yeah, but we are reaching out to the business community as well and enacting the plan as we've, you know, initially outlined it to the council, we can say they're all happening.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you want to see the survey, just go right on Portsmouth's website.
Okay,
it's
great,
there.
Cool.
It's,
okay,
it's a
thanks.
Whole lot of information.
That's what I wrote down. Yeah, you had that. Yeah. Okay, good.
Chris has been pinging me with emails in between meetings, and I've printed a handful of them out because I'm not as good of a conservationist as some of you, and I've got a big pile of paper there. So I've even got a couple of copies here. And there's a lot of information in that survey. I mean, I think there's like a whole, you know, results and, you know, analysis of some of the results, and then there's comments.
Great.
Pages of comments.
Great, great.
Any other questions?
Nope.
So you'll all be receiving an email from me before our next meeting with some, you know, some of that information to digest. And if David, if that's the thought, if we want to come to the next meeting with an idea of, you know, let's have survey questions ready, then, you know, you might be receiving an email that says, here's what we've got. You know, feel free to think about, you know, specific edits if you want to come to the next meeting prepared with those.
Good. Yeah. That's good.
That is good, yeah.
Last order of business is correspondence.
None from me.
Well then. Anybody have anything else to throw into the meeting until next meeting? If none, the meeting is adjourned. It is 7:40.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.
Yeah, it's fun, huh?
Many faster.
Dave is good.
Yeah,
he was
really good.
Robert, thanks for attending.
He's done it three times. Four times.
It's easy.
He's already worked out all the bugs.
Yeah.
You mean?
And he can warn you about potential trip pitfalls.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you.
Have a good night, Rob. Good night, Ed.
I don't recall ever having had such a decent conversation with Mr. Alfred.
It's very different.
Well, he's accessible. Yeah. And he wants to learn.